You're listening to BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Now, more from Max Hastings' memoir. Today, he recalls growing up with his parents, who were both renowned journalists. His father, Mac, a born adventurer and hero to his son, is off to Africa, as we discover in Did You Really Shoot the Television?
Lots of families possess delusions of grandeur about their ancestry, and ours is no exception. In truth, our paternal ancestors were a pretty humble lot. Yet, despite a modest income, my great-great-grandfather managed to send his son Edward to Stonyhurst, the grim Jesuit public school in Lancashire. Edward, in turn, then sent his sons to Stonyhurst. When the eldest was in his last year, a seismic shock fell upon him and the family. He was accused by the Jesuits of a homosexual relationship and sacked. Lewis, big, bold, passionate Lewis, emphatically denied wrongdoing. His father, however, insisted that the Jesuits could not be mistaken. Lewis ran away to South Africa, working his passage before the mast on a sailing ship, with all his worldly possessions crammed into an orange box. On landing at Cape Town in the midst of the Boer War, he joined a group of young professional hunters. Later, he served for a couple of years in the Cape Mounted Police. Lewis fell in love with Africa and spent the happiest years of his life there. Having relished the First World War, which he finished as a major with the Military Cross, in 1920, Lewis secured the hand and fortune of a Scottish heiress. He then resumed his old roaming habits and acquired a tobacco farm in southern Rhodesia, leaving his offspring and wife to amuse themselves as they saw fit. He blew into London at irregular intervals, towering over the bar of the Savage Club as he captivated my father, Mac, with tales of shooting elephant and lion, of camps in the bush under the stars. My mother, Anne, rather surprisingly, found the old boy immensely attractive and loved his rich, booming voice. Mac yearned to emulate Lewis's rambles through great wildernesses, rifle-shouldered and faithful servant at his side. In 1954, the success of Eagle and of its special investigator column offered him a splendid opportunity. He determined to cross the Kalahari Desert in British Bechuana land, modern Botswana, to search out the last of the ancient Bushmen. On arrival in Rhodesia, accompanied by his favourite photographer, Chris Ware, he was undismayed by the scepticism of the locals, who recognised a greenhorn when they saw one. After days of inquiry, Mac at last located an old Chevrolet 1.5-ton truck of wartime vintage. He also met a 20-year-old local named John Curry, who offered his services as driver and mechanic. Curry was no old bush hand, but a restless city boy who fancied an adventure, the perils of which he scarcely recognised. Mac gratefully enlisted him. They bought a water tank, spare drum of fuel, tarpaulin, spade, pick and spares. At last, with Lewis's old big game rifles on the rack behind, the truck ground westwards out of Bulawayo on the first leg of a 1,500-mile marathon. Mac wrote,
"Oddly enough, I had no prescience of possible failure."
Uncle Lewis had once met a bushman when soldiering in German Southwest Africa in 1914. He came upon the little man asleep beside the carcass of a giraffe which he'd killed with a poisoned arrow. They conducted a halting exchange through the medium of Lewis's local tracker, who spoke the bushman's curious clicking tongue. The hunter said he was resting before going to meet his family a day's march distant. He would then bring them back to the kill. Lewis speculated with a shudder upon the state of the meat, exposed to merciless sun, by the time the bushman brought his clan to eat it. Under the Union flag, outside the colonial headquarters in the tiny settlement of Francistown, District Commissioner George Atkinson told Mac that his best chance of finding Bushmen lay southwestwards in the Ghanzi district. He also told him that it wasn't long ago that four airmen who made a forced landing in the Kalahari were killed by them. It's when they're frightened that they tend to be dangerous. After 3 hours, during which they advanced about 20 miles, Father decreed that they should make camp in the shade of a big marula tree. They began to learn a little more about John Curry. He'd been born in the Congo, son of a Lancashire mother and Scottish father, and had never cared much for schools. In consequence, Curry proved a poor hand at the mathematics for working out quantities of fuel, water, miles. But this shortcoming was outweighed by the fact that he was a superb mechanic. That first night, they extended their tarpaulin overhead from the roof of the truck and slept underneath it. Thereafter, they learned better, using the canvas as a ground sheet to restrain the worst of the myriad insects underfoot. The rest of the journey proved an ordeal chiefly by heat. The truck's speed fell below 4 miles an hour. Its radiator boiled constantly. Their water tank was soon more than half empty. Mac, however, was enchanted. Great herds of game roamed everywhere. Wildebeest, springbok, gazelle, giraffe, in a profusion that no later generation of travellers would ever see. Just short of the next waterhole, a flock of guinea fowl chattered in the scrub. Mac jumped down with his shotgun, stalked the birds until they rose clumsily into the air, then dropped three with two shots. A few miles further, he stopped near a herd of wildebeest and set out alone to hunt one with his rifle. As he plunged through high grass rearing above his head, he tried to remember Lewis's advice and carefully loaded and cocked the rifle. But within a few minutes, he realized that the wildebeest had winded him. They were gone. More dismaying, he'd lost his bearings. He had no idea which way the truck lay. He shouted and was rewarded only by silence. He suffered some minutes of near panic as he pushed blindly through the thick cover. Then he became more methodical. Fixing on a tall tree, he circled this in widening spirals until at last he found the truck. On they bounced and clattered, their kit rolling and juddering in a hopeless chaos that tore the labels off food tins and smashed almost everything breakable. At that night's camp, all three men were almost too exhausted to eat. Chris Ware observed that he was at the mercy of a team leader who'd never seen a lion outside a zoo. Fried guinea fowl failed to raise morale. Mac concealed from the others that his bowels were in a state of mutiny. Next day, rounding a bend, they reached a river and found themselves in the little town of Maun. This was the showpiece of what passed for civilization in the Kalahari, complete with swimming pool, golf course, and tennis courts. Within half an hour, they were drinking beer from the fridge of Riley's Hotel. Their chief problem now was time. In just a fortnight, the rains were due, and they had a strip clutch on the truck. John Curry labored beneath the Chevy until at last, clutch fixed, off they drove, following faint vehicle tracks in the sand. When these were lost, they climbed anthills to scour the horizon through binoculars until they spotted the trail again. At Swai, about 100 miles from Maun, they found a white trader's store. Its owner, whose name was Gower, said that it was months since he'd seen a visitor. Would they like a cup of tea? Resuming their quest, after being taken for a joyride by a local camp bushman called Big Guts, at last they reached Ghanzi. This was a wired compound in the midst of the bush, which housed a small police detachment and Ernest Midgley, the district commissioner who administered the surrounding 69,000 square miles of nothingness. Sitting on the veranda of Midgley's quarters, Mac, weary and unshaven, listened as the DC quizzed one of his policemen about the nearest bushman. Baputi, the constable, stood at attention as he reported that he knew where to find a family of Makokas.
I was overwhelmed by a sense of utter helplessness at the sheer enormity of the search that I had set myself so lightly by the fireside of a London club. Then Baputi pointed. Slinging my rifle on my shoulder and dropping out of the truck, I stumbled over the hot sand and threaded my way through the maze of tangled scrub. Loping towards me, raising his knees with a springing lift like an antelope, was a wizened little man with a distended belly and hair that grew in pepper-pot tufts. Where he had sprung from, I couldn't guess. My long quest was ended. I had crossed the Kalahari Desert. I had bashed the stuffing out of a truck. I had pretty well bashed the stuffing out of myself and my faithful companions. But we'd done it. By all the black mambas in Africa, we'd done it. I had found the Stone Age man.
Max Pose, as the gentleman amateur explorer, would have invited derision from the Royal Geographical Society. But to a million young readers of Eagle, and to his son, now as then, the performance was irresistible. The bushman, barely 4 feet tall, pointed to a clump of marula trees. There were 19 of them, 9 women, 6 children, and 4 men. Mac groped presumptuously in a hut. When he emerged fingering an arrow, a chill fell on the gathering. He didn't know that its poison, which can kill a giraffe, was smeared on the bone shaft, not the barb. Only when he handed it back did the tension relax sharply. At that time, it was estimated that 10,000 bushmen remained. But most of these, like Big Guts, had succumbed to the white man's dominance. Only a few thousand lived as this family did, in a manner that had remained unchanged for almost 500,000 years. Mac, Chris Ware, and John Curry were the most privileged of tourists. They'd barely started their return journey when suddenly they glimpsed a huge black-maned lion no more than 5 yards away. It trotted off into the bush. Mac decided that the moment had come to fulfill a lifelong ambition. Ignoring a display of eye-rolling alarm from Baputi, he and John set off in pursuit. They'd stalked some way when John touched Mac on the shoulder and breathed, "Behind you!" Mac turned, glimpsed a crouching form 50 yards distant, and fired. "You've got her!" cried John. It seemed one of the great moments of Mac's life, when at last he joined the brotherhood of Uncle Lewis and all those generations of African hunters he admired and envied so much. "Now let's go after the old man," said Curry. They hurried onwards and found nothing. They returned to the carcass, and instead of a dead lioness, found a huge hyena. It was a crushing disappointment. The nearest Mac would ever come to acquiring the rug of his dreams.
Max Hastings was reading from Did You Really Shoot the Television? Mac was played by Nigel Hastings, no relation, and the producer was Duncan Minchell. Tomorrow, at the same time, we'll find out about that television.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 3 o'clock. Good afternoon. This is Luke Tuddenham. Our drama this hour is Home Front, a series set in Great War Britain 100 years ago. This week, Folkestone's Yuletide Festival.